This is Gloria Minot Presents.
Terry Jastrow began his career in the entertainment industry with ABC Sports as the youngest network television producer in history. During his time with ABC, he produced or directed many major sporting events, including a Super Bowl, 6 Olympic Games, and 60 major golf championships. He won 7 Emmy Awards, having been nominated 17 times. An Archer was nominated for an Academy Award, a Golden Globe, and the British BAFTA Academy Award for her role as Michael Douglas's sympathetic, tortured wife, Beth Gallagher, in Adrian Lyne's 1987 thriller Fatal Attraction. Archer is also well known for her poignant Golden Globe-winning performance in the ensemble cast of Robert Altman's Shortcuts, and for playing CIA agent Jack Ryan's beleaguered wife, Kathy, in Patriot Games and Claire and Present Danger. Good morning and welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Hi, Gloria.
How are you? We're here this morning because, first and foremost, you've written a book, and the book is The Trial of Prisoner 043. It's a novel, but it's a novel based on so many things that's happening today. Now, it's talking about the Bush presidency and the ordering of the launch of Operation Iraqi Freedom following the commander-in-chief's directive, an assault force of 250,000 U.S. and coalition forces invaded Iraq. And your book is precisely about that invasion and what you think the punishment should have been. What if Bush ordered the war based not on assumptions but outright lies? Should and could a former U.S. president be held accountable in court for war crimes? There's the International Criminal Court. The United States is not a signatory to that accord. But talk to us, Mr. Jastrow, about the book, The Trial of Prisoners. Go ahead.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. Yes, it is a novel, and it imagines that George W. Bush is abducted off a golf course in Scotland and transported to the International Criminal Court in The Hague to stand trial for war crimes, of which he's accused in connection with the Iraq War. People say, why did you write this novel? And the answer is very simple. I love my country, but I think we fight too many unnecessary wars that could be avoided. No one would say that all wars are unnecessary because, of course, that wouldn't be true. World War I, World War II, the Korean War, etc. But some and maybe many wars that America has fought have been unnecessary. And I think if we allow such wars to be waged with impunity, without the citizens protesting, then we're just doomed to more such wars in the future.
President Donald Trump plans to address the nation tonight on his strategy for the war in Afghanistan. He's going to send more troops there. Tell us how you feel about that move.
Well, in a general sense, I think that the president, as an elected official, needs to do the will of the people. And I'm sure the American people, many of them, a high percentage would agree that everything must be done to resolve our conflicts before war. Waging war should be the absolute last resort. And secondly, the language that deals with war powers that only Congress can grant a president deals with the fact that a country has to represent a clear and present danger. So, President Trump needs to be aware of that. And the final thing, Gloria, is that, the President 43 and President 45, like all presidents, are citizens of the United States, but they are also citizens of the international community. And initially, they are subject to the laws of their own country, but if that country is unable or unwilling to bring suspected criminals to trial, then the jurisdiction does resort to the International Criminal Court in The Hague.
The Trial of Prisoner 043, a novel by Terry Jastrow, that's what we're talking about. And, Mr. Jastrow, the role the Iraq War had in ignited hatred against the West, spurring the creation of the Islamic State and the global spread of terrorism. We just heard of several attacks in Barcelona and Gambrils and places around the world. Not a day goes by where it is not an attack. Talk to us about that new threat that the West is facing.
Yes, Gloria, along with the horrible loss of life and the huge number of wounded warriors that the Iraq war yielded, what happened is that early on in the war, and mind you, that war lasted 8 years and 9 months, but early on in the war, it was fairly clear that the United States and coalition forces had the upper hand, were dominant. They had overtaken Baghdad. They pulled down Saddam's statue. The Iraqi army was by and large neutered. They found Saddam hiding in a hole in Tikrit. And yet that war went on and on to try to what Bush switched his pretext yet again to export democracy to Iraq. And under Bush's guy there, George W. Bush's guy, Paul Bremer, we had engaged the Iraqi army, but after a period of time, we disengaged them, essentially firing them. And there were a lot of disgusted and disenfranchised people. And some of those, perhaps the most virulent and angry of them all, were the beginning essence of the creation of the Islamic State that we know today. And after all, our war killed more than a million Iraqis. And the truth, when studied, is that they were not our enemy at that time. And we, the United States and coalition forces, went in there for years and basically destroyed their culture and killed more than a million of their people. It's not hard to understand why they would be, you know, disgusted and disenfranchised with the Western thinking and Westerners.
Do you think the United States has the moral authority to force democracy on other nations, but that may not want it?
Of course not. The United States is free to have its own government, but just like when the United States fought the Vietnam War, was concerned about the communism, you know, the Vietnamese, just like Iraq, those people are free to have whatever government form they want. The United States, in my opinion, has no business trying to affect the governments of countries around the world. They should be free, just as we are, to have whatever government we so choose.
The danger of unchallenged presidential power and ego, we seem to be faced with that today. Would you talk about that for a moment?
Well, I will. I wish it weren't true, but in the overall sense, every president is a citizen of the United States, but they're also a citizen of the international community. And I don't really know Mr. Trump. I actually played golf with him one time, but you know, he is subject to U.S. law. And obviously war powers can only be granted by Congress, and hopefully there's, you know, a very clear and present set of reasons that would motivate Congress to grant war powers. But then if he wages a war that is illegal under the jurisdiction of international criminal law, he could well find himself in the future, if not brought to trial in the United States, then perhaps brought to trial at the International Criminal Court in The Hague.
What would you say to those who argue that the International Criminal Court in The Hague is a paper tiger? Because in a lot of instances, when we look at what happened in Liberia and in Sierra Leone, that people were held for long periods of time, witnesses died, and in the case of the former Yugoslavia, Slobodan Milosevic and others, and Radovan Karadzic, all those stayed for a long, long time without a trial being held. Talk to us about the criticism.
Yes, I'm happy to do so. There's actually two answers to that. One is that the International Criminal Court was actually created by the United Nations following World War II, following the Nuremberg trials. It was became very apparent that there needed to be an International Criminal Court that stood above all national courts, because national courts have an extremely difficult, if not impossible, time of bringing tyrannical leaders to justice. And so in the late 1990s, the United Nations convened a convention in Rome to discuss and create international criminal law. 159 countries attended and for months discussed, debated, and actually drafted something called the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court, and that is the governing document for international criminal law. And by the way, the United States very much was present and participated and aided in the drafting. As for the United States not being a member of the UN, in the first case of the International Criminal Court,
yes,
one of the last acts of President Bill Clinton was to sign the letter petitioning the International Criminal Court for the United States to become a member. However, one of the first things that George W. Bush did in his first term was to unsign the letter, basically withdraw the request to become a member. People can make up their own minds about how and why that happened, but it must be said that under international criminal law, a citizen of a country that is a non-member state of the International Criminal Court still can be brought to trial under international criminal law.
All right. My guest is Terry Jastrow. He's talking about his novel, The Trial of Prisoner 043. His wife, Ann Archer, is the founder and international spokesperson for Artists for Human Rights. And I know you're still there. Talk to us about your organization, please.
Yes, thank you, Gloria. Yes, in 2006, I founded an organization, Artists for Human Rights, with the purpose of raising awareness of human rights around the world, making the world more aware of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which Eleanor Roosevelt chaired the committee that created that document after World War II. It's not well known, and it needs to be. I would love to see it printed on every passport of the world. My purpose for Artists for Human Rights is to get those in the creative arts to put attention and create art that has to do with human rights, because artists can change hearts and minds overnight. A film can change your complete viewpoint about a country, a nationality, an ethnicity, an issue. A painting can touch you to the core, and your viewpoint can shift on a subject. Music, we know what music can do. I mean, when I think of the Beatles' wonderful song, Imagine,
yes.
How that touched my entire generation when we were young and touched me to the core and has stayed with me forever, that song. Writers, pieces of work, plays, film. Blood Diamond cleaned up the diamond industry.
Yes.
So there are many things that we as artists can do. And, every great culture has had great art. And when that art is suppressed, which it is in every despotic regime, the first thing they do is they imprison the filmmakers, they ban the books. There's so many examples today. Ai Weiwei, I just went to his magnificent exhibit in Washington, D.C. here yesterday, where he has created art on human rights issues and has been imprisoned and beaten by the Chinese government for his work. The first thing we do is stop the artist, because they know how powerful the artist is. So that was the purpose of my organization, to embolden and engage artists to create work about human rights. And that's why I'm very proud of my husband's book, because I feel as an artist and a writer, he is addressing an issue that has not been addressed properly and fully, and that we need to really look at the loss of human life in this war. 400 and 4,491 American soldiers died in that war, and 230,000 were wounded either mentally or physically. And, you know, in the Vietnam War, we lost 58,000 Americans. The only reason we haven't lost that many lives today is because the body armor is better and it protects the vital organs of the body, and medics can get there faster and medicine is better. But as a result, we have 230,000 wounded warriors, which we are caring for today, as we should. And also, 1 million Iraqis died, and 3.3 million Iraqis have been dislocated, one-third of which are children. And it's absolutely criminal. We went into that war under a false premise. We destabilized the Middle East. It became the basis of ISIS. All the problems we have today in the Middle East started with that war.
Can you tell us briefly about projects you're involved in right now, apart from your human rights work?
Apart from my human rights work, well, I do have to say we partnered with another organization, Voices for Freedom, to free, which are freeing villages in India from generational slavery. So I'm very proud of that. That's something Artists for Human Rights is doing. Secondly, Terry wrote a wonderful play called The Trial of Jane Fonda about her Vietnam War activity, and we did it in Edinburgh at a film festival, and we did it in London last summer, and we're nominated for Best New Play, and we are working on the play now to hopefully bring it into New York. So that's what my heart is in, and it really puts the Vietnam War front and center. It helps us understand what she did, why she did it, and that she was one of the most effective anti-war activists we've ever known, and really helped end the Vietnam War.
All right, we're out of time. Terry Jastrow, his book, The Trial of Prisoner 043. It's a novel, and it reminds me, as I said to you before, it reminds me of what happened with Adolf Eichmann when he was captured by the Israelis. An Archer was nominated for an Academy Award, a Golden Globe, and a British BAFTA. Thank you so much, both of you, for taking the time to speak with me.
Our pleasure.
All right, take care. Have a good day.